3, 2, and 1. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Project Egg Show. Today, we have the honor of speaking with Barbara Turley, an investor, entrepreneur, and founder slash CEO of the Virtual Hub, a business she started by accident that exploded in the space of 12 months to become one of the leading companies that recruits, trains, and manages virtual assistants for businesses who need to free up time and energy so they can go to the next level. With a strong focus on customized training and ongoing career development, Barbara ensures that the team is trained in cutting-edge programs like HubSpot, Entreport, et cetera. You know what I'm talking about. To best meet their clients' unique needs in digital marketing, social media, personal assistant services, and administrative support. Barbara is also a mom, wife to her best friend, Eddie, and an adventure lover with a passion for horses, skiing, tennis, and spending time in nature. Barbara's also done a ton of other incredible things that I couldn't possibly capture in this introduction. So without further ado, I'm going to stop rambling and please introduce Barbara.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be on this show and streaming all over the internet. It's pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, and thank you so much for coming on the show and making time for this. It really does mean a lot to me. So let's jump right in, all right?
Great.
What is your story?
My story is an interesting one because you would think that running a business in the Philippines that is recruiting, training, managing people, you would think that my background was all HR, headhunting, etc. It's so not. I came from the investment banking world. Like, I had no experience even running teams. I always did jobs that were pretty sort of singularly focused. I was on a team, but doing my own sort of thing. And I spent 10 years in equity trading. So on the trading floors, which was a very exciting part of my career that I absolutely loved. And I think I learned a lot of skills actually in that area that have helped me later in other areas, you know, that we can talk about that later. But to cut a long story short, I'm Irish. So I'm from just outside Dublin in Ireland. And I moved to Sydney, Australia when I was about, it's like 17 years ago now. Let's not talk about how old I am. So I've lived here in this beautiful country for about 17 years and forged most of my career here. The investor thing, honestly, I got a bit lucky about 10 years ago when everyone else was kind of, I got unlucky first, like everyone in the big financial crisis of 2008. Everything went to hell in the handbasket. That's a bit of an Irish expression to say it all went to crap. and then through that experience, I got an opportunity, actually an opportunity came my way to sort of hop on the coattails of a startup that was happening at the time in the asset management world. And it was a buyout that a couple of people were doing from one of the big investment banks. And they were like, you know, do you want to hop on this? And I just remember going, yeah, I'll do it. So look, it's 10 years later now, and that company's, you know, it's managing $5.5 billion at the moment of funds under management. And I learned an incredible amount in that company about, you know, how great companies get built. And I always had the desire to build my own company, but I did stay at that company for about 5 years, and I'm still a shareholder there. I'm still somewhat involved, but it gave me the kind of, it just whetted my appetite even more to sort of see what I could do on my own. So here I am sort of 4.5, 5 years into the Virtual Hub, and we've got 120 staff on the ground in the Philippines. I have a 2.5-year-old and another one on the way. So you can't see this, but there's another one down here coming. So it's been a bit of a crazy, crazy journey. A very exciting journey.
Let's jump back into your history a little bit.
Sure.
What first caught your eye with investment banking? Why'd you go that route?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually, because again, it wasn't my intention. It was sort of, I think a lot of things happen in life accidentally. And it's about, it's sort of that you've got to hone that skill of being able to sort of change your mind and being okay with pivoting, even if you're not in a startup. Like, you can pivot in your own life. And I think a lot of people today coming out of university and stuff get very fixated on what they're planning to do, and they miss opportunities along the way. So I actually wanted to be a doctor. I really, and to this day, I'm still really interested in medicine and medical anything. But the truth of the matter was, I didn't get enough points to get into that course at university, and I didn't feel that I could do any better. I think I was jaded by then with studying, and I thought, I just want to get into university and do something. So I made a decision to at least do 1 year of an arts degree. I just thought, look, let's just do something, make a move. And I studied economics and English, and I had never actually studied economics before because I had done mostly science streams at school, and I absolutely loved it. I just was like, wow, this is I've always wanted to know how the money markets work, and actually how do interest rates work, and I was fascinated by macroeconomics in particular. So that led me down that journey. I just ended up going that route. In terms of the trading floors, I was working in a restaurant actually when I was at university. And there was a group of traders that used to come in every Thursday night. And I was just fascinated by the conversations they were having around the money markets. And I did ask them once, you know, what do you guys do? And they were currency traders. And over time, I got to know a couple of them. And one of them said to me once, why don't you come in and sit on the desk for a week or two and just see how it all works? And I was like, wow, that's great. So I did that, and I was sold on that environment. I loved the dynamic, fast nature of it. I loved the way, yeah, it's crazy in there, but it appeals to my personality, I guess. A bit like an emergency room in a hospital, I suppose. It's that sort of thing. So that's how I ended up going that route.
What about that appealed to your personality?
I don't like routine. It's interesting, actually. I don't like routine. I get bored quickly. So for me, I realized that I need to be mentally engaged quite a lot, and I need things to be changing. Like, one of my highest needs is that sense of variety or that sense of change all the time. I also like a lot of uncertainty. I actually thrive pretty well in that, which is quite stressful, actually, but it's sort of something in me that thrives on having to make fast decisions and things moving very fast. And that environment just spoke to me because it fed all of those needs that I have in my personality type. But what's interesting about that is that since I've been running my own business, I still thrive on the, I love running the company and, you know, thriving on the uncertainty of where to go next. But I absolutely love structure within the company in how the operations are run. So it's been an interesting thing to go, I actually love structure, but with a dynamic kind of edge to it where you can change and shift quickly. So I hope that answers the question for you.
Yeah, that's interesting
Yeah.
how you really like structure, but you also like the variety and the dynamic nature.
I suppose how I would put that is actually, if there's too much dynamic and change and chaos, I guess, in the operations of a business, it actually ties the entrepreneur up so that they can't thrive on the chaos outside the business of the markets. Like, so we're not in business, we're in markets, right? Because there's customers and feedback and competitors. It's the same as the financial markets, actually. The markets are changing and moving all the time. But if you've got chaos in the back end, it's like having chaos at home. Then you can't cope with the chaos in the market. So you have to have structure at home and in your own house so that you can actually go out and deal with the chaos in the market and thrive on it. I think that's probably why. Yeah. So I'd encourage anyone listening to really think about that and go, it's like having a tidy house, you know, it's good to have some order at home so that you can enjoy, like, I don't know, going out and partying or whatever it is you want to do, but the same theory applies. Yeah.
So it seems like you need a strong foundation and you need some structure, like at the home base, so that you can then go out into the world and deal with the chaos out there because you're coming from this place of power, this place of structure and foundation.
Absolutely, yes. And your team will feel it as well. So your team will thrive if you have structure within each role and in each department within your business. It allows the leaders of those departments to have the same feeling. The house is tidy, things are in order, so that therefore they can then go out and engage in the chaos of the creation of their own department, their own role. And it frees them actually to explore their creativity because they don't have to be anxious about the day-to-day structure. So yeah, that's something I've discovered myself through running my own business, that I do actually like structure in that way.
That's interesting. So when you're reflecting and thinking, okay, I like this, I don't like this, this is where I feel comfortable, this is where I'm the most engaged, how do you actually go through that process of reflection and pinpointing exactly, like, this is what I like, this is what I don't like?
That's a fantastic question. And as you were asking it, I was thinking, what is my answer to that? I know immediately what it is. Your body will tell you. So you're going to feel it in your bones. You know, it's like boredom. So your body is actually going to tell you pretty quickly what you like, what you don't like. And a lot of us are very disconnected from our own intuition, our own feelings. And I have been for a lot of my life as well, because I've been in a very masculine kind of, you know, the corporate world, and you sort of lose that sense of feeling of what is good for you. And I'm older now. I've had a lot of experiences in life. And I think what I've come to over the last few years is that your body knows, like, you actually know deeply what's right for you, but lots of us don't know how to listen. So I know very quickly if I'm feeling overwhelmed, kind of pissed off, sorry to use that word, but if I'm feeling all these, like, frustrated, all of these kinds of emotions, then I've got to look at that and go, what is it that I'm doing right now that's causing me to feel this way? Now, sometimes you can't eradicate it straight away. It could take 6 months to get rid of the problem, but it helps you to identify what is the problem. And the problem usually is that you're doing something that does not appeal to your natural strengths. And you've got to figure out, how do I delegate that? How do I fix that, change that, so I can get back to what I love doing? And that's how I do it. I just feel it. I just know it.
It seems like the earlier on in your life that you can tap into that intuition, like really feeling what your body's saying to you, or listening, almost listening to the silence in a way, that will give you a much, it just seems like it's much better if you can figure that out earlier, right?
Definitely.
So if you could go back, how would you advise yourself to tap into that earlier? And I know you talked about it a little bit, but I'm really interested in this and really interested in drilling down to that core concept.
So I think, I think it's hard to tap into it earlier because you don't have, I mean, I'm talking more about myself here. Some people might find it easier. And maybe nowadays people actually do find it easier, because I think we've all evolved, and emotional intelligence is something that's much more talked about these days. Mm-hmm. Whereas when I was in my 20s, it was all about get into the big job, career, climb the ladder. Like, it was still that kind of sort of mentality out there. So I think in my early career, I was very much like I am today. I was like, I know exactly what I want. I'm going to go after it. However, I had a lot less confidence about it. I felt it and I kind of intuitively knew it, but I didn't want to speak it aloud. And I would feel kind of a bit anxious about how I would have these feelings. And I think a lot of people might resonate with that. So it's having a deep sense of groundedness or confidence in trusting that what your body is telling you and your intuition is right. Like, it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks, or at the end of the day, how you feel is how you feel. Now, you've got to also look at, though, is that really, is it my true feeling, or is it a belief system that I have that is blocking, that is infiltrating what I really feel, right? So that's the problem when you're younger, that you can't really, it's harder to navigate that. So, you know, people get blocked from scaling businesses because they have a belief system around money or success or whatever. So there, it's important to sort of think about those things. Is it intuition or is it fear? And I think that's the hard part when you're younger, because you haven't got enough life experience to sort of navigate that. But looking into it, knowing, is half the battle.
All right, we just opened up a whole new can of worms here.
Whole can of whoopee just came out there. I was like, as I was speaking, I was like, yeah, we're going into, like, some really cool topics here.
All right, now I have to ask.
Yeah.
How do we separate the fear from the intuition? How do we drill down there? Because it seems like there are many different layers. It seems like there's the layer of, this is who I am at my core. This is who I'm growing into. This is who I aspire to be. These are all the external influences that have shaped me. And these are the beliefs that I'm holding. And there's probably some beliefs that are part and part, some beliefs that are just one and some beliefs that are just the other. How do you tell? How do you see that?
Yeah. And again, you know, the reason I'm passionate, you're passionate about this topic, I can see as well. I also am, because I did spend, again, later in my life, you know, sort of more in my mid 30s, I started to discover things like belief systems, and I started getting very interested in that. And I think everybody, regardless of what you're doing, whether you're an entrepreneur, like in a job, stay at home mom, anything, doesn't matter what you're doing, everybody should study and go and, like, you know, go on YouTube and look, you know, even just read blogs. It doesn't have to be a whole book, but read about your subconscious mind and the beliefs that can be put into that mind when you were 6 and 7, and the impact that that then has on your thinking about absolutely everything, including yourself later in your life. And once you actually start to open your mind to it and read about it and study it, you're going to go, oh, wow. Now, again, it won't help you to, sometimes you'll be like, I still don't know. But the more you dive into it, it is a bit of a rabbit hole, but you'll start to ask yourself, is that really true? Like, so when you think something, go, is there truth in that? Or is that, where is that coming from? So learn to question yourself as well. And again, your body will probably tell you the answer, because the minute you say, is that really true? You'll feel something and you've got to dig into that. But it might not be something that you want to dig into. And that's the painful part. There can be pain there. There can be, you know, ugly emotions that people don't want to face and all that sort of thing. But it's worth going there, because you'll come out the other side a lot better.
What happened? Like, what was the pivotal moment that you started to go down that journey? I mean, I believe you said you were in your mid 30s. What inspired that change in you to go down that path?
Yeah, I think it took me about 5 years to get there. When I was about late 20s, early 30s, I had realized that I didn't see a future for myself in the trading rooms or in the investment banking area. And it was a difficult realization, because I was like, well, what else can I do? And a lot of people go through this, you know, you go, I've done this for 10 years and now I don't know who else I am or what other jobs could I do? And you can start to feel very trapped because you don't allow yourself to think that you could do other things. And I think initially I probably went through a lot of turmoil about it, as opposed to looking at beliefs and things. And then I got involved in that startup. And that was, while extraordinarily brilliant from the perspective of learning, the first 3 years in there were really hard for all of us that were in that. And it's this whole thing of nothing's an overnight success. You know, like, people look at that company now and are like, wow, look what that thing did. And I go, yeah. But I mean, there was a lot of, you know, that could have fell on its face really badly a few times over. So going through that journey, you know, I had a lot of financial issues through those early years. My husband had started his own business and we had a lot of problems going on at home, you know, so it started to break the relationship. And there were personal issues that came up. And it got to the point where you just reach kind of a rock bottom moment where you go, there's something not working. Like, the universe keeps telling you that you're not looking, you're not listening. It's more that the universe is going to keep telling you that you're not listening. And I ended up kind of having to go and get help, really. And I found myself, I think, at a seminar on business, but there was a guy there that was talking about belief systems. And I was just hooked. I went, I need to dive into this. And that was kind of how it happened for me. So take my advice, do it earlier. Just go do it now. You know, don't wait for the universe to make you sick or unhealthy or bankrupt or whatever. It's do it earlier.
So now that you've been going down that path, what are some of the biggest takeaways? And I know we've talked about some of them, but, you know, I really want to just ask that outright.
Yeah. So for me, I think definitely the biggest takeaway is I'm a strong, confident person who knows what I want and need, but I'm not very good at communicating what I need. So I had a problem with, which a lot of people have problems with, boundaries, you know, around, for example, running your own business. A lot of people struggle with boundaries with clients, boundaries with their team, what's acceptable behavior, what's not, and being able to say it in a way that doesn't cause an argument. You know what I mean? Or how do you communicate something negative, but in a positive way to get a good result? So I had to learn a lot of new communication skills. And running such a large team has really challenged me to, you know, I've really had to go into that, because when you've got 120 staff, all of a sudden you've got HR issues, you've got other people with belief systems, and then other leaders running their teams that need your help and guidance to understand how they run their team better. So it's definitely been a, it's been a massive journey for me. And it, the learning, honestly, I think I'm just at the beginning of the learning. So lots of learnings there.
So parallel to this journey of self-discovery, you've also been growing this business that is now a massive force to be reckoned with. So how did you balance that self-exploration, the self-discovery, this very personal quest with building a business and running a startup and growing this massive team?
Yes. The biggest tip I can give anyone is, every time something's going wrong, the first place you look is yourself. What am I doing? Not to blame yourself, because the people can go into self-blame. You have to look at how am I reacting? Like, and it's so big, because sometimes you're like, yeah, I probably lost it there. You know, and I'm quite a passionate person. So I've really had to look at myself all the time. And even when you get negative client feedback and it's so painful and all these things, but you've really got to try and look at yourself first, because if you're the leader of the business, where goes your head goes the rest of the business, regardless of whether you're on your own running something or you've got a team or anything. And it's a commitment to your own state of mind. And I haven't always been in the best state of mind, because running companies is hard, right? There's an emotional roller coaster that you go on. But definitely you've got to, where goes your head goes your business. So it's important to try to balance that and keep your focus there. And that is what will lift you out of even the worst crisis in business, is to focus on yourself first.
I am so glad that our conversation has gone in this direction.
Yeah.
This is very exciting for me. So thank you for being willing to go this direction.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I'm also very raw and real. And I think these are the real things that in business in particular that people need to be talking about, actually, because everyone hears the successes, but nobody talks about, you know, these issues and the roller coasters and the journey to get there and how people actually do this. So yeah, more than happy to share all of this sort of stuff on podcasts.
So when you first started the business, what were some of the actionable steps that you took to get up and running?
Yeah. So the first thing I would say, let's talk about the fact that this was an accidental business. Okay. So it wasn't my first rodeo, as someone said to me recently. I left corporate and I had this massive plan. I made the whole business plan and did everything right. Okay. And I launched, I think I launched something that actually would have been successful had I kept going at it. But let's talk about the failure. Right? So I launched a platform called Energize Wealth, which is still there. I've left it there as like a passion project that I think I might come back to someday. And I had an online TV show. I had a podcast. I was running online programs. It was the whole thing, right? And I did a product launch. I did the whole Jeff Walker product launch formula, did the whole thing. Sort of fell on my face. Like it was very successful looking, but in terms of sales, it did actually break even, but it was like extraordinarily painful for me. And I kind of went into a hole after that, where I was like, oh, I just can't do this. I almost shut down. And I think, you know, people these days, how I would have seen that had it happened again, I would have just gone, yeah, let's launch again. Let's just go and get feedback and let's do it again, not be so emotional about it. Whereas I just went into like a depression about it. But from that few months, everything kind of slid, and it was Christmas anyway. So I took some time out and I had a few business coaching clients and I was helping them. They were small businesses, but they all had the same problem. they couldn't afford to hire staff, but if they didn't hire staff, they were never going to grow. And this was like the catch 22 that everyone's in. I had a virtual assistant myself who I found online in the Philippines. So I just started recruiting some of her friends to help clients out. Like, I wasn't thinking about a plan or a business. And before I knew it, I was kind of getting more calls from friends of clients for VAs than I was for business coaching. And I remember thinking one day, I wonder, is there a business in this? And I did a webinar. I didn't even put any energy into it. I just was like, yeah, I'll put on a webinar, how to successfully use VAs in your business. And it was the most successful one I did. And honestly, we were in business within a second. We were like, I had no website, no business plan, no name, nothing, just a concept. And I solved a problem that people had, and I didn't even know I was doing it. And therefore, the business was born out of that. And that was an eye-opening experience for me to go, business plans and logos and branding. Yeah, it's all great, but you know what? Just solve people's pain point. And then, and that will be, that would, so within a month, I had completely stopped Energize Wealth and was like, right, we're doing this now. And that was it. Yeah. It's now it wasn't quite as easy as that along the way, but that was the initial start of it. So big lesson there.
Okay. So wait a second. Yeah. You had this idea and you're like, all right, I'll throw up a webinar. And then it was just this rocking success. Right?
Not quite. I mean, people bought, but I mean, what you'll find when you have a, when you solve for a pain point that people have, right? What you'll find is you'll solve the first bit and then everyone will be happy for a while. And then the second problem will raise its ugly head, and that will be connected to the first problem that they had. So for example, after 6 months, I nearly shut the business down because it was so painful. Because I had clients complaining, I had virtual assistants complaining, I had like just a torrent of abuse every day from, boundaries were a problem. Like, I had no boundaries, and it was just everybody wanting me to solve the problem of not being able to delegate effectively, not being able to communicate effectively with their VA, the VA not being able to communicate effectively with the client. Like, it was a whole host of problems. And I almost shuddered. And instead I was like, okay, I need to solve the next problem. I need to teach people how to delegate. I need to teach people how to create processes, and I need to train the VAs on how to manage the client, and like, massive piece of work. So over time, those sort of problems, we've ironed them out of over kind of 4 years now, but, and now we're in a good place, but yeah, it takes a while. You know, there's a lot of very challenging times.
Okay. There's so many doors here to go in. So I just want to rewind for a second.
Sure.
You do this first webinar, okay?
Yeah.
You just throw it up there. How did people even find out about it? How did you get people to show up to your webinar?
Yeah. Now, I had done other webinars, right? And I had put money into Facebook ads, and I had done all of that and got loads of engagement and all that sort of jazz, right? This webinar, I didn't bother with any of that. I put it out to the small list that I had, which was about maybe 1,500 people. Maybe it was 2,000 or 3,000 at that stage. I had a list. And I whacked it up on Facebook, and for some reason, people shared it. The title of that webinar obviously it was called How to Confidently and Successfully Use Virtual Assistants to Grow Your Business. And what I discovered from that, the reason I used the word confidently and successfully is because the people who had called me looking for a VA, I was like, why wouldn't you just go and find your own VA? Like, I mean, you can get them on Upwork, right? And they were like, well, I've been burnt in the past and it was a disaster and I just don't know how to do it. And I don't feel confident with it. And I got no success with it. And that's still a common theme out there, that people are saying, I get that offshore is great for my bottom line profit, but I don't know how to start. I've been burnt before and it was a disaster and it doesn't work for my business, is where they go to, which is a belief system that's incorrect. But they need somebody to show them how to do it right. And I think that's what worked, because it spoke to the deep pain that was there. But it was a little bit accidental that I picked those words.
So you had heard this pain point.
Yeah.
You put up this video, you sent it out to your list, you put it up on Facebook, people started sharing.
Yeah.
How many people actually showed up to the webinar?
Not many. So I was a bit, disappointed. And I thought, not many people showed up live. But people listened to the recording. And now I didn't get a torrent of buyers. I mean, when I say it was successful, I got 10 buyers. But I mean, 10 buyers meant I had to recruit 10 people. I was like, I don't even know where I'm going to find these people. I just didn't think people were going to buy it, right? So I think maybe lack of expectation or no expectation meant that it kind of took off, because maybe I wasn't so emotionally attached to the results that it just seemed to work. So while I'm not sharing particularly great advice for anyone there on what to do, I think you just have to try things, and you've got to just tweak wording and just put something out there and throw stuff out there and see what sticks, because something will stick eventually.
Yeah, I love it. And it's the real story. Like that's what happened.
Yeah. People can tell you the 5-step plan to make your webinar go nuts and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, it all comes down to, the pain point that you're trying to solve and whether the pain is acute enough for somebody to want to pay money for you to solve it now, as opposed to sometime in the future. So when I was selling the wealth thing, loads of people signed up to the webinar, but they weren't ready to buy now because they were thinking, well, I do want to make wealth, but at the moment I'm just so in the weeds about my business that I can't think about wealth creation. I don't have any wealth. So, and I realized that I was like, yeah, they're interested, but they're not buyers. That's different.
That's profound. Yes. So you want to solve a really acute problem, like a very, very specific acute problem that they need the solution to now. And they're willing to pay for that solution now.
They wake up every morning and they're like, I am in hell because of this thing today. And they will pay you to do that. Because if they're like, I'm in hell because I can't buy a house. Well, you can teach them how to save or whatever, but the problem is they're not making enough money to save. There's other problems. They're like, I know I need to save to buy a house, but the problem is actually my real problem is that my expenses are too high, or I have there's more acute problems that are earlier in the journey of that person. And that's the thing to try to, that's the hard part, is to try and find where they are in the cycle of what it is that you're going to do. And solve a smaller problem first, more acute, smaller problem.
That is seriously brilliant.
Yeah, accidental. It is brilliant, but it's brilliant because I found out by accident. And I had studied every course out there. I had bought all the courses and they do say solve a problem, but I didn't quite go deep enough with that and go, it's like needle size problem, in the thing that is the real pain point.
That is brilliant, because if you're hitting that like tiny but very deep problem, then you've identified buyers, and then you can keep serving those same people. Like you said, more problems will arise.
Oh, definitely. Well, so many problems that you can't keep up. Like your business will evolve so fast because you'll be like, well, that was just the little thing. But that opens up a can of worms, right, of all the other things that you're leading them on that journey.
But that's a great problem to have. That's a great problem to have, because then people are paying you for the solutions to the problems. I feel like so many people are stuck at this point where like they're trying to sell something instead of trying to fix this.
Yeah. And you don't need a website. You don't need anything. In fact, just try and find people in your local community or people around you somewhere. And solve it for 5 people first, and then get your testimonials and find out, like, you've got to use those as a beta case, get 10 people. Like, everybody wants to launch a membership site. I'm like, why don't you just find 10 people that are willing to do a beta program on Skype and do it live, and don't invest any money in it. Just get feedback immediately, even if the feedback is that was rubbish. Sorry, I wouldn't pay anything for that. Great feedback. At least I burned loads of money on the previous business model where I did everything right and it didn't actually really go anywhere. So big lessons. Yeah.
So at the end of the webinar, the call to action, you ask people to like, how did you frame it and what, like, how did they literally do it? I mean, did you give them a PayPal link? Like, How exactly did that work?
Yeah, I had a few systems set up at that point. So like I was using Entreport. Doesn't matter. You don't need that. I mean, you can just give them a PayPal link, you know, to pay. It's very easy these days to set up a payment page to do something. Stripe or whatever can do it for you. But I offered, the offer was very basic. It was like, look, I'll recruit. It wasn't just a recruitment offer. I had discovered that recruitment, like if I charge $200 to recruit someone or $500, whatever, the problem wasn't, the first problem was recruiting. I did that for a few clients. And then I did it for a couple of people, not before the webinar, but they weren't able to manage them. They couldn't figure out. So the offer on the webinar was a little bit more, was a little bit deeper. It was the next step. It was like, I'll recruit them and we'll do a little bit of HR management. So like we'll pay them. So we'll just charge you X and we'll pay them. And we'll make sure that they show up to work every day and we don't have any funny business going on. And that was, I think, what people, but we just charged a little margin at the time for that. The pricing wouldn't work today at all based on what we do, but it was a test price. But we still have, here's the thing, I still have two clients that bought on that webinar that are still with us today at that pricing. They still get that pricing. So they're like, you know, they've been with us for 5 years.
That is incredible.
Yeah. Two of those early buyers are still with us. Yeah.
Wow. So you found this pain point, you run this webinar, you get some buyers, and then you're like, oh yeah, that's the thing. Let's do that. How did you then pivot everything and go, or maybe you didn't, but it seems like you pivoted and you went all in.
I went all in. But all like, in was like, hey, we need to recruit now. Like I was like calling my VA, can you get 10 of your friends, right? She was like, sure. Now here was the traitor in me though. I was like, bingo, we're in, that's it, we're doing it. And I just, it's this sense of going, I have no idea what we're gonna do here, but the first step is we need people, like at least find some people, like, and then figure out what you're gonna do with those people. And just, you know, I will tell you a story from my trading days. When I first became a junior trader, like my first few weeks on a trading desk, I can remember being frozen in indecision. I was just like, the whole room was shouting around me. And I just was staring at the screen, and the head of trading came over to me and he said, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I was like, I don't, like I was just totally lost. And he said to me, you got to get in the game. He goes, it doesn't matter whether you buy or sell, you just got to do something. And then you're in, and then you do something else and you make the next decision. And he's right, because in indecision, you're actually sitting on the fence while everybody else is playing the game. So you've just got to make a decision and don't worry about whether it's right or wrong initially. You just got to do something and then you're in flow and don't get stuck anywhere. Just keep moving, keep yourself in flow. So that was a big lesson that worked in that moment for me, where I was like, we're in business. That's it.
That's amazing. So you saw the results, you made the decision, you got in the game, and then you just figured it out.
Yeah. And I didn't worry about things like competitors. Like, you know, you should do competitor analysis, all that stuff. I was like, look, I just have this string of customers that are asking me for something and it really doesn't matter. Even to this day, I don't look at competitors. I just listen to our clients and I listen to our employees and we build from there. And we've always done that. You got to keep an eye. You got to keep an eye out to the side of what's happening. But really, your customers are going to tell you what their needs are if you keep asking them. And then as you grow bigger as a company, listen to your employees, because that's where the gold is, right? So you've got two customers, really. You've got your employees and you've got your clients. And if you listen to both sides and within reason try to balance that in the middle, you will develop a powerhouse business doing that, definitely.
I was about to ask, what happens if your employees are saying one thing, but your customers are saying another?
Yes. So your employees want one thing and your customers want something else.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a good example of that. So your employees are pulling back on something that your customers want more of. Okay. In something like that situation, you've got to dive deeper into why the employee wants something different. So it could be because they are already stretched, right? And you're not listening. They're not saying it. They don't know how to articulate that actually what's wrong is we don't have enough staff. the systems are messy. So remember we talked about the structure and the chaos? There's chaos, and they're feeling it, but they don't know how to articulate that. They're just saying, nah, we don't want this, right? So you've got to start to look at, well, is it because we have too much friction in our systems? Is there too much admin and mistakes happening and frustration? That can be one thing. With your employees as well, do you have a culture problem? Is there a cancer somewhere? You know, the water cooler, there's someone who's bitching and gossiping and, you know, this sort of thing. You know, that can be a cancer. One person in a team of 100 can destroy the culture. So then you've got to look at your hiring and recruiting. And so rather than just throwing your hands in the air and going, oh, I just can't get my employees and my clients to, you know, they're my roadblock. Again, you as the leader have to go, that's interesting. Let's dig into that. Let's dig deeper and let's listen more deeply. Let's ask them more questions about why is that? Or what is it about you coming to work every day? Same on your client side. Maybe you might want to get a group of your best clients together or your worst clients and put them on a like a board where you discuss why is this a terrible experience for you? And just be honest with them and say, look, I know you feel like this is a terrible experience and I'm really keen to dig into it. Even if you lose that client, doesn't matter because the next one you bring in will be better. And if you do that, I think that's how you'll solve that problem eventually. Just might be painful.
Barbara, you're like a wizard. And
I should put a witch's hat on. Trust me, it is all because of like, okay, the blonde covers up the gray hair, but seriously, this is all like learned from experience. It's not because I'm a wizard. It's because I have felt the pain of it myself and I have solved these problems myself, continuing to solve problems every day.
Well, it's incredible that not only are you doing all these things, but you're also on this incredible journey of self-exploration. And in between all of these things, managed to squeeze in some time to talk to me. So I appreciate that. I appreciate you being willing to being willing to go so deep on all these things.
Great.
I do have a few more questions for you, and then we'll wrap it on up. We've talked a lot about your professional journey and a little bit of your own personal journey of self-exploration, personal development. But what else has been going on in your personal life this whole time?
Yeah, so obviously, I have the unique challenge of navigating motherhood and entrepreneurship at the same time. And a lot of people will say to me, oh my God, you're like Superwoman. And I go, no, I'm actually not. I just delegate very, very, very well. So to any women or even fathers out there listening, it's extraordinarily tiring, right? I will admit the nights are long, you know, children up at night and this sort of thing. And I'm in a constant personal conflict, honestly, between loving business and entrepreneurship and the me, my own personal space and my vision and my loves and my daughter and soon to be son who's coming soon. But wanting to be a mother, because I actually love doing that as well. And I have managed over the last few years to really split it 50-50. I only work 3 days a week. Well, I say that and then I think, oh, I'll probably do a bit in the other days. But I have my daughter in daycare 3 days a week. And I'm adamant that the other two and the weekend, like there's 4 days in the week where she's with me or my husband or we're together or whatever. Now, what I have discovered, though, is that's worked really well for the last couple of years, but I've been very stretched in the last year with that. And I've discovered that, wow, I made this 50-50 thing work. But what I forgot about was that 50-50 means there's nothing left for me. There's no 10% left for me. And that, I think that was a mistake. I think I should have done like even 45-45 and had 10% that I was very strict about that's just for me. Because I don't get to read anymore. I don't get to do anything other than business and mommy. And that there's been moments I've felt like I'm losing myself. And that's not a good thing because you start to lose the intuition and the touch and you get cranky with your team and your children and then nobody wins. So that's definitely something I'm working on right now before baby number two comes, of how do I make sure that I don't go into the vortex of overwhelm. Yeah. So for all the moms and dads out there listening, I get it. I'm not Superwoman. You just got to be very strict on boundaries and time.
What is, I'm trying to think of the right way to phrase this. I believe that one of the bedrocks of humanity is connection. And we've been talking a lot about, interestingly, it usually doesn't go this route, but we've been talking a lot about connection with yourself and being, you know, very intimate with yourself and with your own thoughts and who you really are. But on the other side of connection is that with another person. So I'm really interested in learning what your philosophy is on developing deep, meaningful, and genuine connections or connection with another human being.
Yes. Okay. So something I'm not great at, right? Not that I'm not great at building connection with another human being. I'm very good at it, but I need to make sure that my phone is nowhere. So with my daughter, for example, I do have a habit of my phone is there and there's work going on. And I've gotten, that was working fine when she was very little. Now she's a toddler and she will even come to me and be like, no phone, mommy. No, she doesn't even want me listening to a podcast while we're like, she knows I'm not present. So I think what I've learned is the importance of presence. And it doesn't matter whether you're listening to someone or you're physically present or you're there, unless they feel you, you're not there. Like, so don't delude yourself into thinking that just because you're present, you're physically with someone or you're listening, that they feel you and they feel heard by you. So there's a difference between somebody listening to you and being feeling heard by the other person. And I think that's the key to connection, is to deeply make the other person feel heard and feel your presence. And that's not easy to do in today's crazy world where we've got social media and constant pinging of things, and you've got to put it away. And it's hard because we're addicted to the phones and things, you know? So I have to put it in another room with my daughter. Yeah. And be strict that that's now no more working. Yeah. Hard though, not my strength.
What's your greatest theory?
If I was to put it simply, life is an adventure. And, you know, the word adventure, I love the word adventure because it has that sense of chaos, uncertainty, unknown. And that is life, right? And if you embrace the adventure of it, it's a lot of fun. But with fun, you know, with adventure comes risk. And that's kind of how that's my philosophy in life, definitely. Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. I love that answer.
That's just it in a nutshell. Yeah.
Can we peel that nutshell?
Oh, you can. Yes. Yeah. More than happy for you to peel into that one.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know the right way to peel. Where should I peel there?
Well, I think, you know, my philosophy in life is an adventure, right? So I love life, right? And I've always done, my life's been, I mean, it's been a lot of fun so far, but it's had a lot of challenges too. But I think that's kind of my greatest growth experiences have come out of the worst adversity or the things that really were quite ugly. And I think accepting that, you know, every sort of 5-7 years, you will go through a time that will be ugly. And it might be ugly for a couple of years because we have, you know, there are relationship breakdowns, there are people, you know, people die. There's, you might go through, God forbid, but, you know, you go through grief. You go through, and that is the nature of life. And I think my mother used to always say to me, and she still does, life is a bed of roses, but roses have thorns. So it's this sort of duality, I suppose, of life, and embracing that and accepting of it. Accepting the downtimes. And I haven't always done this well. I definitely fought against the downtimes when I was much younger. But these days, you know, even when I'm up all night with a baby and it's so tiring and you feel so frustrated and kind of angry, the moment you go into acceptance of it, everything releases and you actually feel better because you just accept what is, you know, in certain situations. I hope that helps to peel it a little bit, but I don't know how else to dive in there.
You've been seriously dropping some gems, and I would really encourage everybody who's watching, listening, to go back and actually listen a couple times or watch a couple times. Like, there's a lot of wisdom there that I'm not even sure I could fully unpack right now, but I mean, it's very profound. So,
thank you. That was awesome. That. It's my, like I said, at the beginning of this, interview, I've had a very, my background is interesting and I've learned a lot through my life, and I've been very lucky in lots of ways to have a very, so far, I mean, I'm not that old yet, but a very rich life in terms of experiences. But I've been, you know, but that's probably the dynamic nature of me, in that I see opportunity everywhere and I get excited by adventure and maybe a bit of risk taking. That's probably, risk is exciting if you know how to harness it properly. Yeah.
I'm really trying not to open that door way too big. Maybe we could do a follow-up on
sure, that. Anytime.
So is there anything about yourself that you think is an important part of who you are that I did not ask you about today? In other words, what did I miss?
Well, I don't think you've missed anything. I think what I would say, though, is that I'm also very aware that I'm one of the lucky ones, right? I was brought up in a family that I had a great family upbringing. You know, my parents fought and we had all the usual family dramas going on. But in general, I come from a strong, solid family that, you know, so my belief systems as a child, if we were to go back to beliefs, I'm one of the lucky ones that were positive beliefs embedded into me early about what was possible for me. I was always told you can be anything you want to be, you know, that those sorts of things are natural for me. And not everyone is brought up that way. So anyone listening who's feeling like, wow, you know, she's got, dig into the belief thing, because you may not have been as lucky. You know, and I am very aware that I count myself very lucky that I got a good start that way in life. And I do think it has a huge impact on you later, and every decision you make later on is linked back to that. So if you have children, anyone listening who has kids, think about what are you embedding in their mind before they're 6 or 7 years old? It's important to think about that, because it does impact how they think later in life. And I do think that's an important point that I would just leave you with.
Last question for you.
Yeah.
I'm 24 and I really have to know, mm-hmm. what is one question that I should be asking you, specifically me, asking specifically you, with your knowledge, your wisdom, your experience, your genius, your wizard powers that we uncovered earlier.
Yeah.
That I just wouldn't think to ask.
I've got to think about that for a second, because you've asked some very insightful questions. I think you're already on a path, like you're only 24, right? So I'm sort of trying to think, when I was 24, I think I was in Thailand at full moon parties and just like, you know, pretty wild, not really thinking about any of this stuff. I think what I would impart to you, I don't know what question I would ask you to ask, but what I would say is that it is also important to not be too serious early in your life, right? So you got to look into these things, but it's really important to have to cut loose a bit and have some fun. Not saying you're not, but in my 20s, I'll be honest with you, my 20s were quite hedonistic. Like, I had this crazy sort of corporate banking career. I partied a lot. I had a great time. And my sole purpose in my 20s was, how much fun can I have? And I really do think that actually, I'm really glad I did that, because I really just found myself to kind of be free. I traveled a lot. I, you know, like I said, I went to plenty of parties and stuff like that and met loads of cool people. And I think your 20s is like an extension of your teenage years can be full of angst and kind of confusion. And then your 20s, you feel like, I'm an adult now, I'm out on my own, and really explore that and enjoy that, because, and then, you know, later on you can really reflect on those things and you'll change anyway as things move on. So yeah, I sort of encourage people, particularly young entrepreneurs, Don't get too serious too early on. You've plenty of time to make the big bucks and to pivot, you know.
Well, Barbara, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing this time with me. It's been very special, and I feel very honored to be able to speak with you. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for such great questions. Really, really insightful questions and great conversation.
Thank you. And to everybody who's watching, listening, I love y'all. I do. You know I do. And thank you so much for supporting the show and sticking with us till the end here. Y'all rock, every single one of you. I'm talking to you. So thank you very much. And I will see you guys and gals on the next episode. Take care.